gather together at Thanksgiving, don't we? 6:40 in the morning. This is Faith Radio Mornings. Well, Thanksgiving, the origins, the very first Thanksgiving, what exactly did that look like? And can we learn some lessons from the pilgrims? What are the pilgrims? What did they stand for? We've got a lot that we want to dig into this morning, and we're welcoming Robert Tracy McKenzie, professor and chair of the Department of History at Wheaton College, and his book is called The First Thanksgiving. Good morning, Tracy. Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Well, it's a fascinating book that you've put together here. What do you think, first of all, is probably the biggest misnomer that we have in pop culture today when it comes to the first Thanksgiving and what really happened?
Well, I think we imagine it in our mind's eye according to the pictures that have been handed down to us, mostly from the late 19th, early 20th century. So we see the big tables spread out in the gathering of pilgrims and Native Americans. And in a certain sense, it's a kind of domestic scene, albeit outdoors. I liken the first Thanksgiving was probably like much more to a 4th of July barbecue. People would have been seated on the ground almost certainly, eating with their hands, and it would have had a very different feel from what we typically associate with it.
And you talk about that the Indians were probably uninvited party crashers.
Well, I at least want us to open ourselves the possibility that that is what happened. The truth is, there's only 115 words that have survived about the first Thanksgiving, so an awful lot of what we remember we've had to imagine. What the testimony to the event says is that Indians came amongst us, and that's so ambiguous it can mean a lot of things. But we do know that the Native Americans had been dropping by without invitation and had become a burden to the pilgrims, so much so that they sent a delegation to the Native American chieftain in the summer of 1621 asking them to stop coming because they couldn't feed them anymore.
So was the Thanksgiving meal as we've come to know it then truly a celebration?
Well, it definitely was a celebration, and that's clear from the evidence that William Bradford, the Plymouth Colony governor, set aside days for a more special celebration. Basically, when the harvest was over, they were grateful that they had made it through the harvest and believed that they had enough money to get them through the winter.
And from a faith angle and a faith component, the pilgrims, of course, I believe, at least in history, had a strong faith, and that was the whole reason, one of the main motivating factors why they sailed to America was to be able to practice their faith the way they chose. Were they interested in sharing their faith with the Native Americans, as far as you know?
That's a great question. William Bradford, when he's writing about their migration to North America long after the fact, does list the motives that he believes propelled them, and he lists several, one of which is the possible opportunity to share their faith with Native American people. The reality is, though, that many of the pilgrims, including Bradford and also Edward Winslow, who was one of his assistants, would have acknowledged that it wasn't very near the top of their motivations. They certainly think of themselves as having a ministry to the Native Americans, but it's really generations before the Puritans in that area are much involved in what we would today call evangelistic efforts with the Native Americans.
So, Tracy, what do you think was the real motivation for the pilgrims to come to this country and to just begin this whole new life? There's a lot of differing thoughts on what motivated
right.
them to come.
Right. Well, I think the way I would answer that question is to say something that's rarely said. I think the single most important motivation was that they were determined to keep their congregation together. If I could unpack that just a little bit, the pilgrim writers tell us that as they had moved to Holland, they actually encountered an amazing degree of religious toleration in the city of Leiden where they were living, and they were thankful for that. But they also found that economic opportunities for non-citizens were very much limited, and they were living very, very economically difficult lives. They also felt that they didn't fit in so very well in the Dutch culture, that the Dutch were more lenient in their religious practices, that they were more liberal in some of their cultural practices. And they see those things as a real strain on their congregation, and in particular the economic limitations are propelling some to decide they have to return to England. And so to try to keep their congregation together, they consider this really drastic solution of moving thousands of miles to a largely unknown land. Certainly they want a place where they can practice their religion freely when they arrive here. I think it's just always good to remember that they more or less had that in Holland. They didn't have it in England, but they did have that in Holland.
Well, and that kind of puts a different light on it, I think, than how we've always thought it was, too. They just escaped the tyranny and ran and came and landed here, too. So that adds that extra stop, if you will, in Holland between
yes,
the two.
Right, right.
We're talking this morning with Robert Tracy McKenzie. He's the professor and chair of the Department of History at Wheaton College. His book is called The First Thanksgiving, What the Real Story Tells Us About Loving God and Learning from History. And we'll get into more of the historical accounts of Thanksgiving right after the break.
Spirit of Thanksgiving here today on Faith Radio Mornings. We're talking about the very first Thanksgiving with Robert Tracy McKenzie. He's written the book, The First Thanksgiving, What the Real Story Tells Us About Loving God and Learning from History.
Tracy, what are some other misconceptions, if you will, that maybe we've been taught historically, we've seen maybe in books when we were going to school as kids, maybe things even that we've talked with our own kids and taught them? Are there some other things that, if we look at the historical accounts, we would probably realign those a little bit?
There's actually quite a few, and I can only have time, I suppose, to mention one or two. The one that perhaps is the most jarring is that the pilgrims may not have thought of that event in the fall of 1621 as what they called a Thanksgiving. And I have to be careful what I mean by that, because it sort of goes to the concept that they had. It certainly was a celebration. They were thankful for God's provision for them. But they thought of Thanksgiving in a very literal sense as a holy day. We forget that the word holiday really comes from that concept, a holy day set apart to celebrate God's extraordinary intervention to provide for them or to deliver from them in a very unusual way. And they were a little bit skeptical of holidays to begin with. They believed the Church of England had, and the Catholic Church before that, had invented many holidays as sort of human creations, and they were determined not to do that. They also believed that a regular scheduled day of Thanksgiving, as they defined it, was actually presumptuous, and that if you scheduled a holiday every autumn, you're effectively sort of equating God with the crop cycle. And before you know it, God is sort of another way of thinking about nature. And they really don't want to do that. So they think in terms of irregular Thanksgiving days. And the one that I think is most moving, which we've entirely forgotten, comes a year and a half after 1621 in the summer of 1623 and has nothing to do with the autumn harvest. Instead, they had been suffering from a severe drought. They had had a day of humiliation and fasting, as they called it, to ask God to intervene with rain. And when that rain comes, they declare a day of Thanksgiving, and they have a worship service that would have lasted probably 6 to 8 hours to thank God for his provision. That's a very different story from the one that we always remember.
Tracy, it seems like this year more than ever, we're losing sight of the true meaning of Thanksgiving. Stores are opening on the actual holiday now, encouraging mm-hmm. people to get out and shop. I mean, Black Friday, it was intense enough, and now we have this. What are some ways that we can maybe have dialogue with family members or friends even leading up to the holiday and perhaps even on the holiday, just pulling maybe from the first Thanksgiving, what you've written about in the book, to help remind them of what the day is really all about?
Right. Well, that's a great question. You're exactly right. I think I noticed that sellers like Amazon now skip the holiday entirely, and we're already having the countdown to Black Friday as they fit. I think that there are a variety of things. One of the things I would encourage if your listeners are interested is actually to spend a little time with William Bradford's Of Plymouth Plantation. This is a history written by the second governor and longtime governor of Plymouth, William Bradford. And in particular, the first half of that book is just a dramatic and moving and inspiring testimony to the pilgrims. I think reminding ourselves of the kind of challenges that they faced is nothing less than inspiring. And I think learning and reminding ourselves more about the setting of that Thanksgiving celebration would, I think, prompt us to greater gratitude ourselves. I like to remind readers that that gathering in the fall of 1621 was primarily a celebration among widowers and orphans. There had been 18 married couples that were passengers on the Mayflower, and 15 of them were divided by death. By the time of that celebration, there were only four married adult married women left in Plymouth Colony. And now about half of the settlers are children, almost all of whom have lost at least one parent. And the fact that they could celebrate is just a really convicting testimony to the kind of perseverance and courage and hope in God's faithfulness that I think we could all benefit from revisiting regularly.
Yeah, and it seems to me that this is kind of maybe the one time of the year, or one of the few times of the year, where people are open to bowing their heads in prayer, even if they're not necessarily a believer, because there's that moment before the meal, the lavish meal in a lot of cases, where we're giving thanks, thus the term Thanksgiving, and people might be open to at least hearing somebody else pray. So maybe for believers, we can actually go ahead and take that step of courage in some cases and pray. I know my mom used to hand out little verses or make us go around and say what we're thankful for, and I was embarrassed as a kid, but grateful for that in my adult life, because now I'm trying to do that with others that are in our family that aren't necessarily maybe walking with the Lord or believers, but it's at one time where they might consider that relationship. So take advantage of that opportunity, perhaps, too, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, I think that's a great opportunity. I think it's, as you say, it's one of those last moments in our culture where there is some expectation of acknowledging that we are not the sole providers of our needs.
Mm. And you have a word of caution in your book, too, about looking back and looking at these Christian leaders and even maybe at times idolizing them. Talk a little bit about that, why it's important to
just look
at that clearly.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely legitimate, in fact, a positive, good thing for us to search for role models in the past. And so I talk about the legitimate need for heroes that we have, and oftentimes our history can provide those heroes. But as Christians, we know we never want to let them become idols. And I think that occasionally is a temptation to us. And when we begin to find ourselves glossing over the flaws in our heroes in the past, or even more, we begin, without really realizing it, to impute authority to our heroes, to say because they believe something, we should believe something similar. We're giving authority to individuals where God has not granted it. And that is I think, actually one of the definitions of idolatry. And, of course, we want to avoid that. I think also we just want to be careful that if we're not very careful, we will give to these heroes that we identify the exact same values that we hold today. And one of the themes of the book is that the pilgrims are examples to us that are inspirational, but they didn't see the world exactly the way that we do, and we need to take that seriously.
Now, I think it gets jumbled up in the heritage and the history and then even what we've made the tradition to become. How can we make Thanksgiving significant this year when we're getting together with our friends and our family? What would you suggest?
It's a great question. I think you start, well, a couple of things. You start with pilgrims' belief in the utter sovereignty of God, which they absolutely held with great fervor. And I think that means taking very seriously that there's no detail in our lives that God is not ordained and brought into our lives for our good. And wrestling with that, I think, is a positive thing. The other thing that I would want us all to try to take seriously is the pilgrim's own sense of self-identity. We lose the power of the word pilgrim. When William Bradford said that they knew that they were pilgrims as they were separating, leaving their loved ones in Leiden, he was quoting from the book of Hebrews chapter 11, that great hall of faith chapter, where the Scripture tells us that these individuals who had suffered so much for the kingdom knew that they were strangers and pilgrims on earth. And so that term really is reminding us of where our identity is grounded and where our ultimate hope lies. And I think that kind of mindset, reminding ourselves that we too are pilgrims, is something that if we let that sort of penetrate our thinking, it would influence the way that we celebrate Thanksgiving. It would influence the way that we live the entire year long.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's mm-hmm. great.
It's a great topic. We appreciate your time today. Tracy McKenzie joining us. Robert Tracy McKenzie. The book is The First Thanksgiving, What the Real Story Tells Us About Loving God and Learning from History. Thanks for the time today.
Mm-hmm. It's been my pleasure. Thank you all, and happy Thanksgiving to you.